Maxwell House Coffee welcome you to another hour of entertainment brought to you by the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studios in Hollywood with the regular Good News cast, plus tonight's guest. And here is your host for the evening, Robert Young.
Thank you, Warren, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight's program is dedicated to the Hollywood preview of the Ice Follies of 1939, which will take place this evening right after our broadcast. Tonight, we're going to get a few hints about the Ice Follies from the stars of the picture, who are here with us, Joan Crawford, Jimmy Stewart, and Lou Ayres. To start our show, Meredith Wilson has prepared to open our show tonight, a winter overture. Let's have it, Meredith, in honor of the Ice Follies of 1939. Beautiful thing, Meredith. I felt like putting my skates on.
It really was good, Bob.
Well, Lou Ayres. Lou, this is Meredith Wilson, and you can tell him personally. Meredith, this is Lou Ayres.
Oh, Lou Ayres. I know your brother, Buenos.
Buenos Ayres.
How'd you like that joke?
The music was swell.
Oh, sorry?
Pay no attention to him, Lou. I guess you've got enough on your mind. I haven't seen so much excitement about a preview since I've been at MGM.
Well, we all have our fingers crossed.
Well, I don't think you need to worry. When I left the lot this afternoon, there were people in every office organizing parties to go to the picture. They'll have to build an annex to that Westwood Village Theater tonight to hold the overflow.
Incidentally, don't let this get around, Bob, but they tell me there are some skating sequences in it that will positively take your breath away.
I've heard about them. Well, what about the story? Could you give us an idea of it and say, about 10 words?
10 words. Let me see. I hear Ice Follies' beautiful picture, stop story about skaters in Hollywood. Love, signed Lou Ayres.
Night letter, straight wire.
Straight wire. Collect. Why don't you ask Jimmy Stewart for a synopsis?
Sure, I'm a bit of a raconteur in a boring sort of way.
Hello, Jimmy.
Uh,
Can you give us the Ice Follies of 1939 in 10 words?
I can give it to you in two.
Two words? Let's hear them.
Terrific.
Oh. Now, come on, boys. Give us some idea of what the story's about.
Well, Jim and I have an ice skating act, and we're supposed to be sensational.
Sure, and then I get an idea to make the act even better. I discover Joan Crawford selling cigarettes somewhere, and I hire her and put her in the act.
Mm-hmm. That ruins everything.
Oh, wait a minute. Now, she's terrific.
Yeah. Then why were we canceled 3 days after she joined the act?
Well, the manager had no vision. Now, you can't imagine a better act for an ice rink. Now, think of it. Lou and I play a property horse on skates.
Property horse?
Yeah. And Joan goes along with the act and sings. Now, you can't top that.
Mm-hmm. But where did it get us?
Well, Joan was lucky.
How was she lucky?
Well, when the act was canceled, she married the front part of the horse. That's me.
I guess you can see where I wound up.
Well, boys, that sounds great, but don't tell me anymore. I want to be surprised when I see it. Now we'll give you boys a treat.
What's that, boss?
Gertrude Neeson's going to rip off a new arrangement of Carioca.
Hey, I'll take two of those.
That's for me, boy.
All right, Gertrude, let's have it.
Have you seen the Carioca? It's not a foxtrot or a polka. It has a little bit of new rhythm, a blue rhythm and fine. It has a meter that is tricky, a bit of wicked, waggy, wicky. But when you dance it with a new love, there'll be true love in his eyes. You'll dream of the new Carioca. And we'll say
ladies and gentlemen, here is Fanny Bryce as Baby Snook. Last week, we left Snooks and Daddy, played by Hanley Stafford, in a San Francisco hotel where they spent the night before visiting the fair. Well, today is the big day. As the scene opens, they are on their way to Treasure Island in a ferry boat. Listen.
Ah, that sea air. Breathe in the fresh ozone.
All right. Oh, I like it.
Boy, it's refreshing. Oh, how I love the ocean. The heavenly feel of a boat beneath your feet. The tang of the salt spray against your face. This is life.
When is the boat going to start moving, Daddy?
Oh, don't be silly. The boat's moving now.
Then why ain't you sick?
Now, what are you talking about? I love the water. Look at those waves lapping against the side of the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Break, break, break on thy cold gray stones, ocean. Roll on, thou deep and dark blue ocean, roll.
Make it roll back, Daddy.
Oh, stop that. Now, come on, let's take a walk around the deck.
All right. Daddy.
Yes?
Oh. I see a funny bird.
Well, that's a go.
How do you know it ain't a boy?
I didn't say it was a girl. I said it was a gull.
What's it sitting on, Daddy?
A boy.
Huh?
The gull is sitting on a boy.
Where's his daddy?
Who's daddy?
The little boy.
It's not a little boy. It's a boy, a bellboy.
Back in the hotel?
No. This boy has nothing to do with any other kind of boy.
Oh. So that's why he lets the girl sit on him.
It's not a girl, I told you. It's a gull, and it's not a boy. It's a boy.
Are you starting to get sick, Daddy?
Yes. And if you bother me anymore, I won't let you see the fair. Can't you play for a while? There's a whole bag full of toys there. Take one out and amuse yourself.
All right, Daddy. Daddy!
What is it?
Who shall I hit with my bean shooter?
Why, don't you dare shoot that thing at anybody. Put it back.
All right.
Now, Snook, don't make me angry. I'm warning you. Let me have that bean shooter. Let me have it.
All right.
Ow! Snook, if you do that... Ow!
Does it hurt, Daddy?
I'll hurt you. Give me that bean shooter. Where's it to me?
Jump in the water.
Oh, Snook, get off that rail. Now, please. Oh, all right. You can keep it. Now, come down.
All right.
All I ask, Snooks, is for you to behave. 5 minutes. We'll reach the treasure island. Why can't you be good for a while and break the monotony?
I didn't bring nothing, Daddy.
Nobody said you broke anything. When you break the monotony, you change from one thing to another.
Like my underwear?
Oh, forget your underwear. What are you laughing at?
I did.
I wish I'd brought your underwear and forgot you.
Huh?
Nothing.
Tell me what you said, or I'll hit you with the bean shooter.
Now, Snooks, don't do that. Put that thing down. Now I know why tigers eat their young.
Who shall I hit, Daddy?
Nobody. I won't let you hit anybody.
Come on, jump in the water.
All right, all right. If you must hit somebody, hit a small man.
Now I'm going to choose. Ibbity, bibbity, shippity, shab. Ibbity, bibbity, come out.
I'm afraid to look. Ow! What's this? Who hit me on the neck?
Daddy, you know who Knobber is?
No.
It's Dick Whittington.
Oh. Are you laughing at, you wiseless? Holy smoke, the same pair.
Hello, something, Daddy.
Snook, now please, just a minute, sir.
What's the idea of hitting me with that bean shooter?
My daddy told me to.
I did not. Why do you say such a thing, Snook?
I don't know.
Well, see that it don't happen again, that's all.
Oh, I promise you it won't, sir. I'm very sorry, really I am.
Oh, well, I can see what you got to put up with. Take my advice and stay home with your wife. You'll be better off.
Brother, you don't know my wife. Come on, sir. Let's get away from here. Oh, I wish this boat had docked.
Why?
You've got me into the most beautiful mess of trouble. Just wonderful.
You like it, Daddy?
No, I don't like it. Now, try to behave till the boat gets in.
I'll be good, Daddy.
All right, don't forget. Let's sit here. Oh, have I got a headache.
Over the fountain, Daddy.
What is it?
What's that long pole on the top of that boat?
That's the crow's nest.
Where's the crow?
There isn't any crow. As soon as the boat gets underway, a sailor climbs up there.
To get the egg?
No, there are no eggs in that crow's nest. That's the place for the sailor. He sits in the crow's nest all day long.
Don't the crow get an egg?
There isn't any crow.
Why?
Because there isn't.
When are we going to see the fair, Dad?
In a couple of minutes. Now you can get a good view of Treasure Island. Look.
Ah, I like it.
What a beautiful sight. Like a magic city.
Make it disappear.
Oh, don't be silly. I can't make it disappear.
Do some magic, Daddy.
I can't do any magic.
Just one trick.
I have no time. Now, don't bother me or I'll get angry.
Make my hat disappear.
Oh, all right. Give it to me. I'm going to throw it overboard.
Yeah.
Now, watch. Hocus, pocus, salamis, hocus. It's gone.
Make it come back.
Watch. Hocus, pocus, wham. Here's your hat.
Do it again, Daddy.
No, no more.
Hocus, pocus, wham. Daddy.
Oh, what is it?
Make my hat come back.
Oh, where is it?
I threw it in the water.
What? Oh, is this a trip? Come on, let's start getting near the front. The boat's pulling in. Hurry up.
There's Dick Whittington again, Daddy.
Leave him alone. Walk fast, walk fast.
Hocus, pocus, wham!
What do you mean?
I made Dick Whittington disappear.
Oh, you pushed him in.
Help!
Help! Quick, man overboard. Oh. Throw him a lifesaver.
What flavor, Daddy?
Here, let me get it.
Yeah.
Grab this life belt, mister. Yeah. I'll pull you back on the boat.
Not me. I know when I'm well off. I'm going to swim the rest of the way.
Well, thank heaven he's a good swimmer. Snooks, come down off that rigging.
No, you're going to spank me.
Why, Snooks, how can you think of such a thing? Mm-hmm. You don't believe I'd spank you, do you?
Yes, I do.
I wouldn't dream of touching you.
Are you sure?
Why, Snooks, darling.
All right, I'll come down.
That's a sweet child. I wouldn't dream of... I got you.
Say, Bob, here's something that'll amaze you, I think. You know how many pounds of coffee were imported into the United States last year?
Oh, a million? 5 million? I wouldn't know how to guess, Warren.
Oh, you're not even warm. 1,900,000,000 pounds, Bob, according to the best estimates.
That's a lot of coffee. And it certainly explains why your favorite topic of conversation is a favorite with most Americans, too.
It does, Bob. For good coffee contributes more to the enjoyment of living in this country than anywhere else in the world. That's why we're glad that more and more people are finding pleasure and downright satisfaction in the new Maxwell House coffee. Proud that more people, in fact, are buying Maxwell House today than ever before in its history. And friends, we believe we know why. You see, from the day it was created more than half a century ago by that master coffee blender, Joel Cheek, Maxwell House has been known and appreciated as one of the world's finest coffees. Millions of people considered it just about perfect. But today, after months of painstaking research and experiment, this famous blend of superb coffees has been made even richer, more delicious, more full-bodied than ever before. You'll taste its extra goodness in your very first steaming, fragrant cup. Then, too, there's the remarkable new radiant roast process we've developed. This amazing process roasts each coffee bean evenly all the way through, and so brings out the true natural flavor of the superb new Maxwell House blend. With Radiant Roast, there's no chance of weak coffee due to under-roasting or bitter coffee due to parching. Your new Maxwell House is always full-bodied, always smooth and mellow. So if you haven't tried Maxwell House lately, won't you order a pound tomorrow? We think you'll say, this is the finest coffee I've ever tasted. We think you'll agree this new Maxwell House is more than ever good to the last drop.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight again, Maxwell House presents for your pleasure Miss Milica Korgis, the sensational singing star of the Great Waltz. For her first number, she has chosen the most celebrated aria for voice and flute, the famous mad scene from Lucia di Lammermoor. Miss Korgis.
Oh,
Oh, that was indeed beautiful, Melissa.
Thank you.
You know, we have tickets for you at the preview tonight.
Preview tonight? What preview?
Joan Crawford and Jimmy Stewart and Lou Ayres, the Ice Follies of 1939.
Oh, that is wonderful. I feel calm, I thank you.
Yes, indeed.
Hello, dear. Oh, she's charming. What's all this ice talk, young?
Ice Follies preview tonight, Westwood.
Oh, yes, something with skating, isn't it?
Only the best skaters in the world, that's all. Oh. Ever hear of Bess Earhart, Roy Shipstead, Shipstead and Johnson? They're just a few of the famous skaters in the picture.
Well, they finally put them in pictures. I always told my pupils they'd make good someday. That's very gratifying.
Your pupils.
Yes.
Morgan, I bet you couldn't stand up on a pair of snowshoes.
My boy, I suspect you're trying to goad me into telling of my experiences with the Royal Canadian Northwest Mounted Police.
Canada now.
But I just refuse to talk.
Frank, you're not impressing anybody. Melissa has left the stage. Why should you start to make up a broken-down lie about how you were a Canadian flatfoot?
Sir, you're addressing Morgan of the Mounted.
Oh.
The bravest officer that ever caught a crook, skinned a skunk, and trapped a trapper.
Huh?
Oh, Bob, I wish you could have seen me in those days. 6'2" of muscle, brains, and beef.
I'll take 5 cents worth of dog meat.
You want to eat it here? I say, you did it to me. What were we talking about?
Get back into your uniform, Lieutenant.
Yes, well, I'll never forget my first assignment after I was sworn in, Bob. There I was, just a green kid with a brain like a steel trap, a magnificent physique, and a heart that feared nothing. I'd rush into any kind of dangerous situation without a thought and come out unscathed. In those days, I was part lion, part bull.
We're into that part now, folks.
Yes. Young, do you know there are newspapers that pay $2 a piece for quips?
I'll remember that.
Yeah.
Let's hear about your first assignment, Sarge.
Well, I was stationed at an obscure outpost called Naskawaska. It was a beautiful spot high in the snow-covered hills, far from the hurly-burly of the cities. Oh, Canada, I love thy frozen peaks.
Say, what is this frozen peak, Frank? A new candy bar?
Young, you have no feeling for poetry. I was trying to convey to you something of the awe-inspiring dignity of Naskawaska. My little cabin was completely shut off from the civilized world, except for a telephone, a radio, and Lowe's Naskawaska, 2 blocks away. Every Wednesday was Moose Night.
Did you ever win?
Just once. I was the lucky ticket holder, and I took home a 1,500-pound four-point moose.
Four's a tough point.
Well, I made it the hard way. Wait a minute. What is this? We're going too far. What are we talking about?
I don't know. Something you picked up at Lowe's Naskawaska.
Oh, yes. I said. She couldn't resist my uniform. I happened to sit next to her in a Lowe's seat one afternoon
Right.
when I was up. What?
You were talking about a moose that you won with a lucky ticket.
Oh, the moose with a lucky ticket. Well, I presented my stub, and they gave me the moose on a halter. He trotted quietly home behind me, and I tied him up in the kitchen. Magnificent animal. He would have kept me in fresh meat all winter, but I didn't have the heart to kill him.
Why not?
Well, there was something about his face that appealed to me. The worried look of a hunted animal, a gleam of nervous frenzy with suffering underneath. Bob, have you ever looked a moose in the eye?
No, Frank. What does a moose look like?
Well, like Hanley Stafford with antlers.
All right, you've got Hanley tied up in your kitchen. What happened?
Well, we lived there together for several weeks, as friendly as you please. I no longer had to keep him tied up, and he used to eat breakfast and supper with me. Of course, it was winter, and I had to keep all the windows closed, so pretty soon the atmosphere grew a little. It was tense.
So, the moose left.
Yes. No, I left. I was transferred from Naskawaska to a more important post in Chillawanda.
Well, you must have felt great about that.
Well, yes, I like being successful. But it was sad to break the many happy associations I had made in Naskawaska. The sheriff, the postmaster, the keeper of the general store, and most of all, little Snarkbo.
Snarkbo? Who, gee?
Snarkbo was a little Eskimo girl, pretty as an igloo. I mean, a picture. She was the only Eskimo in the town, so she was kind of, lonesome, till I got there. She kept all the native customs, ate raw fish and tallow, spoke only Eskimo, and made her living by harpooning seals.
You understood this Eskimo, Frank?
Oh, every word. And when I left, I handed her a present that I knew would delight her Eskimo heart.
Blubber?
Well, she cried a little. Oh, you mean blubber? No, no. I gave her a package of Eskimo pies.
Yeah, fair enough. So you're off at Chillawanda. Was it cold up there?
Pretty cold. The day before I got there, a fellow bent down to tie his shoe and froze to death. They had to bury him in a bass drum. That's beside the point. I was soon to have my great adventure.
What was it?
Well, I had barely unpacked my duffel and settled in my cabin when a flash came over my shortwave radio from the Dominion chief. I can still hear the machines fluttering. Calling General Morgan. Calling General Morgan.
General?
Well, I'd been promoted for my work in Nascoata. It was an urgent call, practically an SOS. An epidemic had sprung up in a town 300 miles to the north, and serum was needed immediately. Well, sir, I got the serum from the Chillawanda dispensary at once, harnessed my 8 huskies to a sledge, and started north that very afternoon.
You were really in a hurry, huh?
My boy's speed was the essence. I whipped my huskies mercilessly toward the pass in the teeth of a blinding blizzard. I couldn't see my hand in front of my face.
Well, how did you know where you were going?
Well, I stayed on US 101 all the way. I can't bear to tell you of the 1,000 hardships I conquered, Bob, but the worst disaster of all caught up with me just as I was on the point of reaching safety. A pack of hungry wolves.
Oh, that's the end.
No, not yet. I knew that wolves were cannibals, so if I could kill one of them without stopping, the others would stop to devour him and give me a chance to get ahead. Mm-hmm. I aimed carefully over my shoulder and picked off the lead wolf.
Good shot, Frank.
Well, not bad. He staggered and fell, and the pack stopped with him. It was horrible. But within 10 minutes, they had caught up with me again. I could hear them snarling. I could almost feel their fangs in my throat.
The what?
Fangs, fangs.
You're welcome.
My dogs mushed on bravely under my whistling lash with its 9 leather thongs.
It's what?
Thongs, thongs.
You're welcome.
I looked back at the wolves and took another shot, then another and another. I took a 5th shot, and it was empty.
The gun?
No, the bottle. In the next 10 miles, I killed 9 wolves, and each one was eaten in turn. Finally, the whole pack was inside of one ferocious wolf. And he wanted Morgan for a dessert.
What a dish.
Well, the wolf was very hungry. By this time, my dogs were exhausted, but so is. Needless to say, I outwitted him and got through with the serum.
Now, wait a minute. What about the last wolf?
Oh, yes, that's right. Bob, did you ever notice that handsome fur coat I wear to previews?
The wolf.
No, I got it at Magnum's on Dollar Day. Well, so long.
Say, Jimmy Stewart, you haven't forgotten that familiar Thursday evening custom of ours, have you?
Not at all, Bob. After all, Maxwell House and I are old friends, you know. I used to be on this show myself. As a matter of fact, I held down your job a couple of times, you remember?
I certainly do, Jimmy. And just for old time's sake, I think you ought to do the honors for this evening.
Well, thanks, Bob. Well, pull up your chairs, everybody. It's time right now for that grand Thursday evening custom. A moment of relaxation over a steaming, fragrant cup of Maxwell House coffee. And as usual, we're inviting you all, wherever you are, to join us in your own home. All set, Warren?
All set, Jimmy. Here's your cup. And friends, yours and yours, too. Sugar? Cream? Now sit back and enjoy the friendly stimulation of your new Maxwell House coffee while Meredith pipes us a tune. We now pause briefly for station identification.
KFI, Los Angeles.
Ladies and gentlemen, we continue the second part of our Maxwell House show, and after our program is over tonight, all of us are going out to the Westwood Village Theater near Hollywood to see the preview of The Ike Follies of 1939, which stars Joan Crawford with James Stewart, Lou Ayres, and Lewis Stone. But right now, we're going to have a special preview for you by doing a scene or two from the picture. The Ice Follies of 1939, in addition to having all the thrilling skating stars, Bess Earhart, Roy Shipstead, Shipstead and Johnson, and the International Ice Follies, presents a story around the lives of 3 young people, J.
Jimmy Stewart and Lou Ayers, who do a turn on skates, and Joan Crawford, who sings in their act. As our scene opens, they have just finished a performance in the Hollywood skating rink, and the manager of the rink is talking to them backstage.
How'd we do, Mr. Barnes?
Oh, it's a swell act, kids. I never saw better.
Oh, did you really like us? Me too?
No, who could complain about you? A little lady with a figure like yours, with that voice and personality? Say, I hope they're paying you enough dough.
Oh, he's such a nice man. If I hadn't met you first, darling, he'd be the one.
Oh, yeah? So come on, run along with that.
How about buying a hungry girl a sandwich later?
Listen, do you ever stop eating? Well, Mr. Barney, can I pick him? Is that 20 carat or... Just,
oh. Oh, it's a beautiful girl. A lot of talent.
Yeah, she was selling cigarettes in the Kansas City rink when I met her. Heard her voice. Here she is.
Well, 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 that's certainly wonderful. You know, I was telling Mr. Maxwell I never really enjoyed an act more. I think he's dead wrong about letting you out.
Out? Well, he's firing us? Why?
Well, he says...
A singer don't belong in an ice skating act.
Well, that's funny. Those are almost the exact words he used. Well, I'll go see about getting your dough.
Now, let me tell you something, mister. You fellows will never do this to us again.
Well, no, sure not. Why should we?
Because someday we're going to be the sensation of the country, and someday I'm going to show the world. I'm going to do things on ice that have never been done before.
Oh, sure.
I'm getting off skates. I'm producing from now on.
Well, there's a show going on.
I'm
going
to tell stories on ice, written especially for skaters and singers
sure,
and
sure,
dancers.
Of course you are.
And you can tell that boss of yours he'll be coming to me on bended knees someday for my ice folly.
Come on, kid, let's get dressed. Okay. You saw this coming. Well, I happen to look in my crystal ball, the one that tells the future.
And... Yeah, yeah. Well, go ahead and tell me that I was wrong. You were right.
Oh, not me. I never crow when another guy lays an egg.
Well, I haven't laid an egg, pal. I'm right, and they're wrong, and you're wrong. And someday I'm going to show you all. Because I got ideas that are going.
It's me.
Oh, come in, honey.
There's a nasty rumor around that it takes women a long time to get dressed. But seeing you two still in negligee.
Yeah, shut up, sweet. Look, get your baggage packed, will you?
What's happened?
Well, I quit.
You quit? When they liked us so much, why?
Well, I'm sick of working in joints and getting paid off in peanuts.
Darling, you can eat peanuts.
Say, what is this, mutiny? Who's running this show, anyway?
You are, of course, but I...
Well, then, let's not have any back talk from the help.
Well, that was a brilliant career I had. A little short,
now, listen,
but...
Listen. Now, honey, just leave our lives in my hands, will you? Word of honor, I'll take good care of them. Now, stop giving me this why and when and what for business. Just keep yes on me. You won't regret it.
All right. Ask me something.
Did you ever meet anybody as handsome, as talented, as all-around wonderful as I am?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. That's the wrong question. Well, hop to it now. Wait for us outside.
Okay.
Well, what are you sitting there for? Come on, get that stuff together.
Alas, poor skate, you served me well. Farewell, dear runners. Mayhap our lives will never touch again.
You should have been an actor.
Mm-hmm.
That very night, Larry and Mary fly to Yuma, where they're married. They fly back and go up to Eddie's room next morning to break the news to him.
How'll we break it to him?
Well, it will be subtle. I'll show him the license.
I'm a little scared, Larry. I mean, I'm worried.
What nice talk, a 3 hours-old bride.
Well, suppose he doesn't like it.
Well, we're over 21. Now, sweet, have some sense. He loves us both.
Well, you've been pals a long time, and a girl steps in.
Why, you're crazy. Well, that's one of the reasons I'm married.
Well, if I've been in my right mind, what chance would you have had?
That's enough lip from you. Well, maybe just a little more lip. Maybe just a little. There. Now, let's go in.
The bride gets lifted over the threshold. A very important custom.
Oh, well, all right. Don't get used to this. It's not going to happen again.
Well, we've taken care of one tradition. But there's another thing we should have. Something old and something blue.
Something old, something blue. Mm-hmm. Let's see now. There it is. There it is, my partner.
Where have you two been all night?
Get set, Mug. We've got news for you. Oh, you hold him, Mary, while I tell him.
Eddie, we're married.
What?
Married. Us. Yuma, Arizona, this morning.
Oh. Well, come on. React. Give out with many happy returns or condolences or something.
Oh, sure. Excuse me. Congratulations.
And you can kiss the bride, too, can't he, bride?
Well, just as once.
Well, that's not very good. He's bashful. Say, will you excuse me a minute? I got a few things to attend to.
Is it fine, Yuma?
Yes.
Must be a nice trip. I'm leery of flying myself. Birds don't try to ride an automobile, so why should human
beings? Eddie.
Yeah?
Why don't you say it?
Say what?
What's on your mind? What you really think about Larry and me getting married?
Why, I like it. Hey, I got coffee on the...
No, Eddie, please.
I like it.
Only what?
Well, how did the guy begin? I'd rather cut my tongue off before I'd hurt you.
But, Eddie, I want to hear.
Well, he used to be on ice what Gable is on picture screens, and now he's in his last summer's straw hat.
I'm holding him back?
Oh, I didn't say that.
But you are saying it.
No, not exactly. Look, Mary, you're a great kid, and I love you. When I hear singing, it goes in one ear and out the other. When you sing, it don't do that. But what's singing got to do with you?
With ice skating?
Honest, I'd rather listen to you than to anybody.
But it doesn't belong in an ice skating act, huh?
Well, does it?
I don't know. Larry seems to think it does.
The management of the Ice Palace didn't agree with him. That's why we got fired yesterday.
Fired?
Oh, that slipped out. I should keep my big mouth shut. I'm sorry.
But he said he quit.
Guy in love with a dame puts up a certain amount of fun, I guess.
Now that we're married, he'll insist that I stay with the act. He's so stubborn about some things.
Maybe, but all the same, he's a great guy.
He's not a great guy. He's the greatest guy that ever lived.
Cut it out, kid. We're both fighting on the same side.
I thought I was going to be a help to him, and I'm not. I'm hindering him instead. Well, what happens now, Eddie?
Nothing happens. Everybody lives happy ever after. Just forget I shot my mouth off.
I won't be excess baggage, Eddie. I won't.
Oh, you ain't anything like that.
Oh, yes, I am. And I'll continue to be. He'll keep getting fired, and at first he'll blame audiences, his position on bills, anything and everything but me. Then he'll get to realize what's really holding him back. Maybe he'll hate me then. Oh, I can't have that happen, Eddie. I love him too much.
Well, that certainly sounds good to me. Joan, will you save me a seat at the preview?
Right next to me, darling.
Good.
Now, wait a minute. Here, Lou's on one side of you and I'm on the other. Where are we going to put Young?
Oh, he can sit on my lap.
Yee-hoo!
All right, now Gertrude Neese is going to sing a song from the Ice Follies of 1939. It's all so new to me. Come on, Gertrude.
Before we met, the sky was just a sky. The moon was not a work of art. Oh, what a revelation. Since I'm looking at the world through my heart.
gentlemen, day after tomorrow is the $100,000 Santa Anita Handicap. And we thought you might be interested in hearing something about it. So we brought here Dr. Charles H. Strube, the general manager of the Santa Anita track, and Mr. Harry C. Curlin, the California horse owner, who is known as one of the shrewdest handicappers in these parts. These gentlemen will be introduced to you by one of the newest and most enthusiastic of horse owners, MGM's executive in charge of production, Mr. Louis B. Mayer. Mr. Mayer.
Thank you, Bob. It is true, ladies and gentlemen, that I am a new and enthusiastic horse owner. I can remember listening to Earl Sandy on his program last year when he told you Stagehand was going to win the big race. Although I hope to have two horses carrying my colors in the handicap day after tomorrow, I'll tell you right now, I do not predict that either of them will win.
If Maine Man or Quick Devil is listening, Mr. Mayer's only kidding.
I don't think the horses will mind, Bob. We get along pretty well. But I'm glad to have this opportunity to introduce to our listeners a man who must bear at least part of the responsibility for my becoming a horse owner and breeder. I have known Dr. Charles Stroop for a good many years. I knew him when he was owner of the San Francisco Baseball Club. And he's the kind of a man who is so enthusiastic about whatever he's doing and so persuasive and eloquent that he can talk almost anybody into almost anything.
Did he ever sell you a baseball team, Mr. Mayer?
No, he didn't, for which I'm truly thankful. But he did talk to me about buying horses and racing them and breeding them, and he got me so interested that I gradually weakened, and finally I made the plunge.
But you're not sorry, are you?
Sorry? I should say not. I find that the business of breeding fine thoroughbreds is most interesting because it's truly constructive. Did you know that California was once famous for its thoroughbreds, Bob?
No, sir, I didn't know that. I thought Kentucky was the thoroughbred state.
Kentucky is a great state for breeding horses, but California can be just as good, and I'm going to try to prove it. That's why I have brood mares and stallions on my ranch. I'm going to breed horses right here in California. And if I can't produce another Seabiscuit or Manowar in 10 years or so, how happy I'll be.
That would really be something. You must employ a lot of people on your ranch, Mr. Mayer.
Yes, we have quite an outfit. We're not going into this thing in any half-hearted sort of way, because we're so anxious for it to succeed.
I imagine you know enough about horses by now so that the next time we make a racing picture at the studio, we won't need a technical advisor.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but I'm trying to learn all I can. But, Bob, I want you to meet a man who really knows, the general manager of the Santa Anita track, a man whom California is proud of, Dr. Charles Stroop.
Mr. Mayer, I think you're flattering me when you say I'm even partly responsible for your interest in racing. I remember a picture you produced back in the silent days called Old Kentucky, and I know the man who produced that picture must have been a lover of horse and horses.
Dr. Stroop, do you mind if I ask you one or two questions?
Not at all, Mr. Young. Go ahead.
Well, sir, I've heard many people talk about your plant at Santa Anita. I've heard them say it's the finest track in the world. Could you tell us some of the features that have given it this fine reputation?
Certainly. Among others, 6 years ago, we worked with an engineer for an entire year in perfecting the method of photographing the finish of a race. This method was unknown to racing anywhere prior to that time. It is now a physical impossibility for the judge to give a wrong decision on a finish, no matter how close the race.
I suppose that's the kind of thing that's very important to owners like Mr. Mayer.
It certainly is, and is more important to the public, Bob.
Another modern and important feature has been developed at Santa Anita, in which we photograph the start of each race with a high-speed motion picture camera, so that in case of any protest about the start of a race, we have a complete picture. Each day, we run these pictures for the owners, trainers, and officials of the racetrack.
Are other tracks using these modern methods?
I believe some are using the photograph finish, but I think these features will eventually be adopted on all first-class racetracks in the world.
One more question, Doctor. What is the weather forecast for Saturday?
The weather will be clear and the track fast.
And who's going to win the handicap on Saturday?
I don't know.
Mr. Mayer, will you answer that question?
No, Bob. I only have hope.
Well, good luck. However, ladies and gentlemen, we have here with us a man who has agreed to stick his neck out for the benefit of the entire country and make a prediction. He studies the horses like a scientist. I went out to the track with him on Tuesday, and by following his advice, I only lost $1.80. Here he is, the owner of Sweep-A-Lot and Masker, Mr. Harry Curlin.
Thank you, Bob. You'll be glad to know I did even worse on Wednesday.
Harry, cut out the kidding and start prophesying.
Well,
you mind if I listen, Mr. Curlin?
Not at all, Mr. Mayor. The handicap is at 1.25. The horse that runs the last quarter of a mile in that race in around 25 seconds will probably win.
Okay, Harry, who's going to do it?
Well, it might be Gosum. He's a good horse. He's won some tough races, and he's good shape, but I don't think it will be Gosum.
Well, what about Kayak the Second?
Kayak is a great horse. It is generally agreed that when he lost to Bottletop, Kayak was off form, and he has proved since that he's all right again. But
not Kayak.
I don't think so.
All right, Cravat.
Cravat has a great background for a racehorse. He's descended from Man O' War on the mother's side. And on his father's side, he's of the Sickle family. So you know he's got plenty of speed, courage, and class. But
not Cravat.
I don't think so. There's one horse in the race that I think will be close to the pace all the way and should win. And his name is Specified.
Ah.
But take my tip and don't bet on him.
Well, why not?
After all, Specify may not be listening to this program.
Well, that's right. But let's have your selections for second, third, and fourth.
Well, I guess I might as well be hung for a wolf as a sheep. However, remember, these are only predictions and are based on a track being fast. I'll pick Specify to run first, Cravat second, Kayak third, and Gosum fourth. Now are you satisfied?
Well, Harry, I don't see how we can ask you any more, and thank you very much. It will be very interesting on Saturday to see how close you come. And in any case, on behalf of the Good News program, I congratulate you on your courage.
Thanks, Bob.
Our thanks also to Dr. Strube and to Mr. Mayer for dropping in on us this evening. Tonight, Meredith Wilson's concert hall is again honored with the presence of Melissa Gorgeous, who sings a universally appealing melody, Massenet's immortal Elegy. Warren, it's time right now for a word of that very practical wisdom we've come to expect of you.
Thanks, Robert. Friends, I don't suppose there's any more familiar sound in this world of noises we live in than this.
And 25 makes a dollar, and four is $5. Thank you, ma'am. Good day.
Yes, you must have heard something very much like that when you did your marketing this morning. But how about that pound of coffee you bought? You got the right change, I know. But did you get all the flavor you paid for? Did you get your money's worth? You see, air steals away coffee flavor. All coffee, whether ground or in the whole bean, starts to lose flavor the moment it's roasted, if exposed to the air. In fact, ground coffee, packed in ordinary containers where air can get at it, loses as much as 45%, nearly half, of the precious flavor you've paid to enjoy in only 9 days. Now, that's just why we take Maxwell House coffee, still fresh and fragrant from the roasting oven, and pack it in the familiar blue super vacuum can. No air can get in, so no flavor can get out. Maxwell House comes right into your kitchen with all its flavor and goodness sealed in, none wasted. So if you've had trouble getting a really good cup of coffee, try a pound of the new Maxwell House, won't you? Today, more people than ever before in its history are enjoying this famous blend of the world's choice coffees, now marvelously improved. And remember, when you order Maxwell House, you're sure of full flavor, full value, every pound. You're sure of coffee that's not just days fresh, but roaster fresh. And no coffee can be fresher than that.
Your music has been great tonight, but now comes the real treat.
What's that, Bob?
The preview. Come on, Meredith. Put down that long baton and get your dinner jacket on. This is really one of Hollywood's big nights. Boy, you'll see a panorama of real 18-karat glamour and 1,000 thrilling sights. Come on, Warren, let's go.
Put on that percolator on the way to the theater, and with Maxwell House we'll start the evening right.
I'd like to come along too, Bob, but it'll be an awful job keeping Snooks from breaking everything inside.
Well, never mind. Come on, Frank, let's get started.
Well, now, just a minute, young. Joan.
Yes, Frank?
Put on your dashy bonnet with the blue ribbons on it, and let's go. You know, the preview starts at 8.
Thank you, Frank. That would be fine, but I really must decline. I'm sorry, but I've made another date.
Oh, you made another... You did a thing about it all. Well, I say Gertrude. My dates were mixed up. But now everything is fixed up. I've got passes and the gasoline is free. It'll be a gay affair. Jimmy Stewart will be there.
Yes, I know that, Frank. But Jimmy's taking me.
Jimmy's taking... He's got... Oh, that you...
Oh, now, Frank, don't be discouraged.
What?
For a gentleman of your age.
Stop
all
it.
The girls are just a little bit too gorgeous.
What are you talking
Jimmy's
about?
Right, Lou, don't you think?
Sorry, Bob, but I can't think. I'm going to escort Melissa Gorgeous.
You are? You've got... Oh, well, I don't... There doesn't seem to be a... Oh, baby Snooks, would you like to go to see the Ice Polly show? Don't forget that I'm the chocolate soda laddie.
Well, I'd like to go with you, but it really wouldn't do, because my heart belongs to Daddy.
Put on your old gray bonnet with the blue ribbons on it. Come along, let everybody go. Though we really hate to leave you, we have got to see the preview of the Grand Ice Polly.
Talk about your folly.
Grand Ice Polly.
We salute the world premiere of The Ice Follies of 1939 at the Palace Theater in Superior, Wisconsin, next Saturday. Next week, our guest, Robert Taylor, in the powerful dramatic play, The Criminal Code. And all the regulars, Frank Morgan, Fanny Bryce, Hanley Stafford, Gertrude Neeson, Meredith Wilson and Melissa Gorgeous. See you next Thursday. In the meantime, go to the movies and take the family with you. Be sure to see Nelson Eddy in Let Freedom Ring. This is Bob Young saying good night.
This is Warren Hull saying good night and good luck for the makers of Maxwell House, the coffee that's always good to the last drop. This is the National Broadcasting Company.